Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Now, is health the new religion? Today, the author and director of the Institute of Ideas, Claire Fox, will be giving a talk on this subject this evening in Dublin. Claire, good afternoon to you.
Great to be here.
Presumably, if you think that health is a new religion, you think this is a bad thing.
Yes, this is not me particularly having a go at religion, but I think it's ironic that when we have a seeming decline in religious authority over people's lives and people feeling that maybe, you know, being told off and made to feel guilty and shamed about things the way religion is done, that there's this kind of new secular version of it around healthism, which
right.
I'm nerve-wracked about.
Yeah, but is that just a matter of tone, really? Rather than, because, you know, most people would agree to be healthy or healthier isn't a bad thing.
I would certainly not want to advocate that people make a virtue of being unhealthy. But I think to decry people's lifestyle choices as shameful, as to kind of induce a lot of guilt, to describe the way people live their lives through the prism of denormalization with a kind of priestly class hectoring us and so on and so forth. And also, I mean, you have to say, do we believe that actually the greatest value of life is healthiness or longevity? Is that the only thing that we want to measure these days? Mm. And if you look at a lot of public health policies, that's what it's like, you know. It's like, you know, everything should be subsumed to that. And I actually think sometimes, you know, enjoyment, freedom, making decisions about how you spend your leisure time are kind of risk factor that one can decide as an adult in terms of the kind of life you want to lead.
Yeah, don't most reasonable people do that anyway?
They do, but why is there therefore a relentless pursuit of anyone who won't conform to a particular view of what the good life is?
Mm.
I think that's what I'm most object to. These are government policies pursued, you know, internationally, particularly in the West. Here we are in a situation where people are living longer, brilliantly, you know, till they're 85. But you would think that we were threatened with the greatest health risks every day in schools, in all sorts of social and public policy. There are laws and regulations being brought in because apparently we live such unhealthy lives, we're all about to die.
Yeah.
And there's talk of epidemics. There's some very authoritarian rules being brought in. And I think that way of demonising...
What kind of authoritarian
rules? Well, you know,
rules?
The kind of things where you have sin taxes, you know, that you actually charge people because they're doing the wrong thing, that you actually really create an affront.
What's a sin tax?
Well, they're actually putting up products which they consider, I mean, there's minimum unit pricing being brought in Ireland, for example, where they basically say, we're going to charge you, we're going to make sure that you can't afford to drink, right? So these kind of sociable activities. So it's not a neutral information regime.
Mm.
Something in relation to smoking. Nobody's going to say that smoking is good for you, of course. But, you know, punitive measures where, for example, they're going to ban smoking in prisons, in psychiatric hospitals in the UK. All this endless stuff about plain packaging, anti-advertising bans, all of these different things. I think it's just the relentlessness of it.
Mm.
Now we have.
But it
kind
is
of
not a good idea to smoke. It's bad for you. It's addictive. It
yes.
causes
and
cancer,
you know,
and a range of diseases.
Do you understand that? I think that most adults have got the gist, right?
Mm.
We know that. But I was making the point, say, for example, with the kind of cruel and punitive way that they're bringing that in into psychiatric hospitals. I think that those are the kind of things that indicate to me, and the fact that they want to ban smoking in lots of outdoor places where there's no health risk. They say they're doing that for denormalisation purposes. I think you kind of get the sense of this having a missionary zeal about it that doesn't treat people with respect as though they can make choices. It is true that you can decide to do things that are bad for you.
Yeah.
I've been known on occasion
yeah.
that I have got drunk. Do you know what I mean? I have occasionally eaten more than I should have done.
Mm.
As an adult, I have sometimes chosen to do things that I've decided I want to do, despite the fact that it's not going to lead to a pristine life. I'm also surrounded by people. If you go out and, I mean, there's nothing worse than going out for dinner with people, is when the whole time counting their units, looking at the calorie intake, discussing the nutritional value of whether they should eat this bean and pulse versus that. There's something about that joyless puritanism that I don't think we should celebrate. And I think it turns us into a kind of almost like hypochondriacs, you know, obsessively thinking about our own health. And then sometimes if we won't conform, then you get these kind of NGOs and government directives that basically say you are a bad parent if you don't make sure that your kids never eat chips. Or, you know, in Britain, they have primary schools instructed to check lunchboxes to make sure you're not giving your kids a chocolate bar. I mean, the whole thing to me feels a real affront to adults' capacity to make decisions about how they live their lives.
But that sounds like The Handmaid's Tale, Claire.
Well,
in the real world, things aren't as bad as that. And most reasonable people give themselves a bit of latitude around such as you said.
I entirely agree. I understand.
Smoking is different, though, isn't it? Because it's addictive.
Well, first of all, it's not just smoking. Well, first of all, it's not addictive. But first of all,
Smoking isn't addictive?
No, that's why loads of people have given up. I mean, if it was so addictive, right, it would be very hard for millions of people to have given up.
No, that's why so many people haven't given up, because it's addictive. Are you actually saying smoking isn't addictive?
I am. This is, by the way, this is a big debate in genuine science terms, right? In terms of what's addictive or not. I mean, these days people say that shopping is addictive. It becomes a good excuse for going out and spending a lot of money, right?
Yeah, but you're comparing shopping with smoking, which is physically addictive.
No, I do not think it is physically addictive, but I don't want to get hung up on that, even if you accept that that's what it is, right?
Yeah, but it's important because there's a difference.
I could give up. I don't use my willpower to give up. I could make an excuse to you that I'm an addict, which would make me hapless and in a medical position. But I do know that as a lot of my friends have given up, that what it is that they've got stronger willpower than I have.
So you're turning it into a moral thing now. If people don't give up smoking, they don't have the willpower.
No, because I don't choose to do it. That's what I'm trying to say is that 20% of people in the country, no matter what they do, carry on smoking, not because they're hapless addicts, because they want to carry on smoking. I'm saying that we're medicalizing that. Smoking is incredibly bad for people. I don't want people to smoke. It's also the case that they haven't stopped at smoking. Now there is a war on sugar. Now there is a war on salt. And there is a war on alcohol. They're now saying plain packaging for alcohol products. They're now treating drinkers, even moderate drinkers. They're saying it's bad for your brain, bad for your health. Don't drink in front of the kids. I'm saying it's a public health, relentless atmosphere of policing lifestyles. That's what I'm objecting to. I'm not saying that all of the lifestyles I approve of, and I'm certainly not trying to say smoking is brilliant. But I do think as adults, we choose to do things that are our business. And you rightly pointed out, we're reasonable with each other. We understand each other's foibles. I'm talking therefore about the policy makers who bring in laws and regulations that treat people as inferior, socially below contempt, because they happen to choose to have a lifestyle choice.
But
they don't
below contempt is your language rather than the language.
Are you seriously telling me that you don't notice the demonisation of smokers over a period of time, or you haven't noticed the kind of sneer that's used to talk about people who dare, you know, get their kids to eat junk food? And the worst thing then is that then some of them, they say, oh no, we don't want to be horrible and demonise people. We just think they don't understand, so we're going to talk to them very slowly in a kind of patronising, paternalistic voice, and we're going to make sure that we stop them doing things that are bad for them, as though we're children. And I find that offensive and, you know, insulting.
Okay, so it's the tone you don't like.
Yes, I've told you it's the tone, but I think that people should be free to make wrong choices. Yeah. I think people should be free to do things that are not necessarily a good thing. I suppose the big thing is, I don't think living a pristine, healthy life, it's an option, but it shouldn't be a state-dictated only way to live. That's the point I'm making.
In this country, for instance, there's a law against smoking in your car if there's a child in the car.
Yeah, a child defined as under 18.
Yeah. That's reasonable, isn't it?
No, I don't think there should be a law about it.
Because the child doesn't ask for secondhand smoke.
But on that basis, the child doesn't ask to live with their parents. The child doesn't ask to be brought up in the religion of their parents. The reality is that it's an insult to parents. It's also, by the way, has a minimal health impact if you smoke in front of a child. Most people...
Really? I think pretty much every health organisation in the world says that passive smoking is dangerous, including the World Health Organisation.
No, first of all, even the World Health Organisation is pushing it, because the World Health Organisation has very ambivalent views on this. But no, passive smoking is not a health risk. It is a chronic health risk if you smoked continuously in a confined space with a small child for years, having one fag in the car with your kid. But I'm not even advocating. I'm saying it shouldn't be a matter of criminal law with £1,000 fines. But it also doesn't explain, for example, why they would say that you shouldn't be able to smoke outside. More and more places are now saying we should ban smoking in parks. We should ban smoking on beaches. And I'm suggesting to you that it's not all driven by health. But anyway, there are all sorts of things which we as private individuals might do. For example, GAA, playing GAA might not be good for your health, right? Being a sports person, right? Get a lot of injuries, right? People make choices about what they do, how they live, what risks. You always are weighing up risk versus enjoyment. Part of living in a free society has to be that. We don't, in my opinion, think that it's a free society. We have the right to dictate how child rearing happens, unless you think that somebody's abusing their child. It's in rare instances that one intervenes in that instance. So I think we have to be very careful. I mean, are we going to go and inspect, you know, oh my God, that mum's just made chips. She's got too much sugar in the cup of tea she's given the kid. I mean, she's actually, are we going to spy on them? Now, that is, I know, hyperbole on my part. Mm-hmm. And I understand, I'm printing, but I'm talking about a trend. And I do think that there is at least reason to pause when we come to public health. Yeah. At least say, is it a virtuous thing per se? Maybe we should have balance it with a free society, with enjoyment, with being treated like adults.
Where do you draw the line, though, Claire? Is there a line at all where the state should intercede?
Do I ever think the state should intercede ever? Of course I do. I mean, I used to be a mental health social worker, right? I'm not a kind of, I don't think abolish the state. And I'm not, because one of the caricatures could be that I think we should get rid of traffic lights and we should all go whizzing around in a mad world. I'm saying that we have bent the stick towards healthiness as a virtue, with the state intervening at the expense of liberty, in ways that we dare not challenge because we're then told that we're irresponsible. Mm. People always say, think of the children, and you will know that every time you want to bring in censorship, every time you want to bring in any draconian laws, somebody will say, think of the children.
Yeah.
Of course, it implies that anyone who might be more freedom embracing and concerned about civil liberties thinks that children should be ignored and treated badly. Yeah. I'm not suggesting child neglect is a policy or that we force feed them cigarettes or chips from an early age. I'm suggesting that we have gone too far in accepting a draconian atmosphere. Now, as it happens, you'll probably know this, but in the kind of, I think it's the nanny state league or something that they did, you know, Ireland's come third in Europe, right? Now, I think, you know, maybe Ireland shouldn't be so proud to come third in the European league table in that instance.
I didn't even know there was a league table. Well, who gives this award?
It was brought out. I mean, UK came second, you know, so I'm not trying to. What's really interesting, the freest, the people who came last, or if you want, a freer, were Germany and Czechoslovakia. Now, the last thing I knew, Germany was not plagued with people dying of ill health, right? But they've got less regulations. I'm suggesting as well that I think one of the things that's happened is politicians, let's be honest, have, you know, suffered something in terms of authority over recent years. It's not as though they've found a great mission for themselves. I certainly know in Britain, you know, the political elite is scrambling around trying to look as though it knows what it's doing. It hasn't got the courage or the confidence, and it certainly hasn't done this, to have big, you know, they're not using medical science to solve some of the big medical challenges we face. We've got a mess of a health service. They don't know what they're doing. But they want to do something. So they're delighted with themselves to kind of micromanage our lifestyle choices. You know, they feel like they're, oh, this is something we can do now. And we can kind of talk down to people and say, we're saving you. And, you know, I think that in that sense, it's the something must be done syndrome. And I think those of us who care about the quality of political life and actually the quality of medical science and real health should not be distracted by this relentless nannying, because it's patronising, paternalistic and bad for a free society.
Yeah. The speech you're giving tonight, you're here at the invitation of Forest, the pro-smoking group, who are funded by the tobacco industry.
Yes.
Do you think the tobacco industry are very interested in truth, in our civil liberties and our health?
I am not remotely interested in what the tobacco industry are interested in. As far
but
as
you
I'm
take con- a check off them, though.
Yeah. I haven't got a check, right? I don't mind coming to Ireland on a freebie, let's be honest, and see my family, right? Let's go for that. But what is an interesting thought, because one of the things that's fascinating for me is the number of NGOs and charities, which I've argued with over the years in Britain, who say we're independent and the tobacco companies are all evil because they've got an agenda. And then I find out all these NGOs and charities are funded by the British government. And sorry, but hundreds of thousands of pounds by the British government. They then lobby the British government and tell the British government that we need more regulation. And the British government says, oh, all right, then. And then they say, we're speaking on behalf of the public. But they're actually, there's a certain degree of self-interest in all of this. I've no doubt the tobacco companies would like people to be less intolerant of tobacco. That's not why I'm here. I'm interested in it because I'm interested in freedom.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.